Hey y'all, Casey Kasem here bringing you a brand new episode of Get Real with Casey Kasem. It's the podcast that goes behind the scenes of the fantasy football industry. On this episode of the show, I got to have a conversation with John Moser. You might know John from Dynasty Trade Calculator, a tool we talk about a lot more in this episode. He also created Dynasty Origins, the reason I started playing Dynasty Fantasy Football. We went more into depth on that as well. We also chatted about what Olympic medal he'd have a shot at winning, what sports teams he is a fan of, why he started playing fantasy football, and a ton more. Make sure to follow John on Twitter at @DTC_JohnMoser if you aren't already. You can find me on Twitter at @TheCaseyKasem. You can follow the pod on Twitter at @GetReal_pod. You can find my writing with the Fantasy Footballers at TheFantasyFootballers.com. This podcast is a proud member of the DAP Network. To help grow the show, there's a Patreon now. Yes, come be a part of the Stay Rad crew. Become a member to submit questions for guests, a Patreon-only perk, exclusive content, a first look at new merch, yes, new merch, and much more. Right now, the Patreon is just in the beginning stages, but the plans for it are big. Again, if you can help out, that is much appreciated. You can find the Patreon at patreon.com/CaseyKasem. That's CaseyKasem. Even if you cannot monetarily support the show, a rating, review, and share mean the world. Thanks to all of you for being so rad. Thank you so much to Trophy Smack for being an affiliate of Get Real with Casey Kasem. This is a spot to check out if you're looking for fantasy football trophies, belts, rings, draft boards, and more. I have an affiliate link. It's in the description. Check that link out in order to view all the rad items they have there. Free shipping, free engraving, 100% satisfaction guaranteed. I've been a fan of theirs for a while, and they're definitely good people over there. Make sure to use the discount code GETREAL for a free ring with the purchase of a trophy or belt. Note that you have to have both the trophy or belt plus the ring in your cart for this discount to apply. Live draft season is upon us, so what are you waiting for? Also, if you're going to draft night out on Saturday or the Fantasy Football Expo on Sunday, please say hi. I'll be out in Canton, and I'd love to talk to the people who are fans of the show. I don't have a booth or anything, but I will be there all day, so come kick it. Thanks for listening to all of that stuff. Now, let's get into the chat with John Moser. Just like that. Just like that. So how you doing, John?
Doing good. Doing awesome.
Excellent. Excellent. How's the typical day going for you? Like, how did it go from the morning to, like, today? Was it a normal day for you?
It was. Yeah, I'd say so. Nothing out of the ordinary. Did my day job, my 9-to-5. Mm-hmm. Prepped a little bit for this, just thinking what the heck I might say. I don't know what people might find interesting, but, you know, get into it and we'll figure that out. But yeah, it was a pretty normal day. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, same thing. Like, we went to the normal 9-to-5, came back to the house and just, you know, got ready for this. So yeah, same old, same old. Nothing too out of the norm, but, you know, I was excited all day to get to come on here and talk with you. So yeah, so that everybody can actually, if they don't know who you are or what you're all about, we'll get into that. But to take it back to, like, the very beginning, because that's what I usually do when people come on here, is talk about when you were a kid. Did you play sports or did you watch sports, or was there both going on?
Love sports. When I was a kid, it was mostly like baseball for me, growing up. So T-ball got me into that, and a little bit of flag football, when, you know, say like second, third grade. And I didn't really watch much. When I did, it was baseball games. But my family wasn't really, you know, sports, watchers, viewers, you know, spectators of it. You know, we would go and see, like, you know, the Lakers play. I grew up, a little bit in LA in my early days. So we'd go to the Forum back when it was the Forum, watch the Lakers, some baseball too, but yeah, not a whole lot of football in my past, believe it or not. It wasn't until like my college days that I started to really get into it. So
you're a Lakers fan. So is that why I see you're wearing a Patriots shirt? Is that why you're a Patriots fan too? I'm just kidding.
So I think that's a valid question. So Patriots fan, because, as I just mentioned, I just, you know, got into football around the college years, and I went to college on the North Shore of Boston.
Gotcha.
So precisely the exact time that the Tom Brady dynasty kicked off.
Yeah.
You know, so I started college in the year 2000. So there was that transition, you know, Bledsoe started the year, and then Brady took over. That the whole rest of that is infamous history. But you know, right along with it, I was watching every single week, even prior to the Brady years. So you know, I was hooked, and all my roommates, you know, that's what we did every Sunday, you know.
And when did you find out about the wonderful world of fantasy football?
Fantasy football came to me through a work colleague, guy named Mike Indostad. He was somebody who, you know, was mentoring me in my early years at my first job in the production world. And he was already into it. He had a league that was, you know, already, I think, 8 or 9 years old, something like that, you know, had started in the 90s. And I knew what it was. Some of my high school friends were playing it in the 90s. So I was aware of what it was, but I didn't understand why it was so fun and cool to, you know, have, you know, the two worlds. There's the TV world of football, and then the online world, you know, with all the fantasy teams. I didn't understand how those were really truly connected until this guy Mike introduced me to it. And it was just a redraft league, you know, just your run of the mill. This was a CBS league, you know, one quarterback, two running back, two wide receiver. I don't even think they had a flex back then. It was, you know, kicker, defense. Yeah. So truly like the default format from back in the day.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I mean, it was like, it's a bug. I got the bug, and I didn't want to do anything else but just research and try to, you know, predict, you know, get my predictions to where, you know, I was comfortable, you know, in my drafts every year, and be able to speak intelligently, or, you know, be able to do trades and not get whooped.
Yeah, right. You know,
so I mean, yeah, but it was totally casual, relaxed. You know, from there, and that was a year, it was 06, I want to say, 05 or 06. So and it only took me 3 years or so in redraft until I was ready for something different. You know, and like, okay, I got a taste of this, but I know there's a way to immerse yourself all year round. And so I heard about keeper leagues, right? Mm-hmm. So there's different ways you can do keepers, but usually you only keep a handful of your team, throw the rest back and draft them over. That only worked for me for like a year or two. And I'm like, I want all these guys. I want them all. I don't want to throw anybody back. These are my guys, you know? And then, yeah, the natural thing was to go to Dynasty. I didn't even know Dynasty was called Dynasty, or it was a thing, like a legit format at the time. I'm just like, okay, I'm going to convert this keeper league, and we're not doing a, you know, a regular draft. We're going to do a rookie draft. And lo and behold, I find online resources. The more I look, I'm like, okay, this is already a thing. Thank God, because now got things I can read online, you know, the articles that were existing out there. Some podcasts were around for that, but not too many. And but once I got into Dynasty, that was all I needed.
And when you started out playing redraft, and then you did the keeper, and then the Dynasty came out of that, what was the biggest challenge going from something like a redraft league to going to this Dynasty, this new frontier?
Yeah, so it's the knowledge of the player pool. You have to have so much deeper knowledge of all the, you know, the bench guys that would sometimes not play on Sundays, but they're still valuable because they might be called to action, and you want to be ahead of the curve. So it's learning, you know, 300, 400 player deep pools, and then transitioning away from being so reliant on the waiver pool to like bolster your team week to week. So, cause that's basically decimated in a dynasty format. If your league's deep enough, but, the trading, I would say, you know, paramount between the two formats. You can get by in a redraft league and never have a trade, you know, and still win your league. You know, dynasty, you're really relying on trading to make your team better, you know, because you're not going to hit on rookies every year. Mm-mm. Just not statistically speaking, it's not going to happen. So there has to be another way. Not going to find them on waivers unless you're super lucky. There might be one or two a year that, you know, make an impact that year. But a lot of times those guys need time to develop. So, trading is, that was my whole world. I, you know, that was my hobby. I would dedicate hours to formulating different trade scenarios to offer to everyone in my league. And that's all I did for a couple of years. It's fun though. It's because it opens a dialogue. It gets people talking, and then, you can spin off into very different conversations from there. And sometimes it doesn't end on a nice note, right?
Right.
people have different likes and dislikes and values on guys. And yeah, it can get testy.
When you first started trading, how did you figure out how to go about a trade that you felt comfortable doing it, and that you didn't feel like, I'm sending this trade and either, oh man, I'm going to lose this trade, or, oh man, I don't want him to think I'm trying to fleece him.
it's the tap dance. Right. Cause you're going to be playing with these people for hopefully a while. So you don't want to burn any bridges or, upset people. Because unfortunately we do infuse emotion into this game. But I think that's part of it, separating your emotions. So you're not attached, and homerism, you have to kill that. You cannot be attached to your home team whatsoever. In fact, I went the other way. I told myself, I'm not going to take on any Patriots players. First of all, it was easy in the Belichick era. There were very few times you could rely on a running back from his stable that could produce week to week, Dylan was one of those guys, law firm once in a while, but overall, they were split in time. And we all know Bill can't draft wide receivers to save his life. We have to bring them in, the Mosses, the Welkers, Edelman might be the only homegrown one that I could really think of, that might be a Hall of Famer. Tom Brady, I probably had him on a bunch of teams throughout the year. I mean, he was always steady Eddie. Mm-hmm. So couldn't go wrong there. He'd spread the love, and obviously the tight ends were great, but they had back to the trading. So you got to take that emotion out of it and, try to find start at the even ground as much as possible on value. And you have to kind of prod and poke. You have to see, you have to get to know your league mates. And the only way to do that is to talk football. Not necessarily from a trade angle, right? Just get to know their, mm-hmm. their likes and dislikes. I mean, do they like to be run heavy? Are they zero running back? Are they a homer? If you have homers in your league, take advantage of that. And I did.
Yeah, for real.
Many times. I mean, my father-in-law is a good example. He's a diehard Packers fan. He's in one of my leagues, and you better believe I have swung a few deals that were, in my favor just because he had to have that next guy, from the Packers, or even, one of his favorite college teams. ADP, probably the earliest thing, right, that we all relied on for values, for trading, to understand who's near who, if you had to stack players in a package, what that meant, relative to the other side. Like, oftentimes, as we know, four quarters does not equal a dollar. Sometimes spamming one side isn't the way to go, or isn't the way to an even trade, a good trade. But it's practice. Honestly, it's practice. Now we have tools out there that are beyond the ADP that take it a step further. I'll shameless plug with the calculator. There are a lot of resources that are just designed for trading. ADP is, you can use that for a lot of different things. You can use it to draft, right? But calculators are there. They are for trading only, and it's a great barometer. If you're not sure about something, even if you are sure, it's nice to see it visually in front of you, how those things can stack on top of each other to equal the other side or not equal. Right. We try to make it easy with those kinds of tools so that it takes a little less thinking out of it, or a little more thinking out of it. And you've got a third party opinion at your disposal, to gauge that. So,
well, since you brought up Dynasty Trade Calculator, I'm not going to say you can't plug your stuff, because I was actually going to get to that. It is a very important part of who you are as a fantasy football person in this industry. Like, it's part of your brand. How did Dynasty Trade Calculator even come about in the first place?
Yeah. DTC started out as an Excel spreadsheet with macros embedded in it. And we would keep a manual database of all the relevant players and infuse ADP values with our own values, as well as doing polls in Twitter. When we actually started pre-poll, but when those came around, it was real sweet.
it made
that process a lot easier for us. But we'd also look at trades that went down on actual transaction sheets to see, does this one side make sense for the other? And it runs the gamut. You're going to see lopsided all over the place, but you have to distill that and figure out what's going on. There's probably things we don't know about. Is someone contending or not? Are they a homer? Are they overpaying for Aaron Rodgers just to have Aaron Rodgers? That kind of thing. But so we wanted to make a tool that was just a third party, nonpartisan opinion that somebody else could use as a baseline, just a barometer, and as a mm-hmm. springboard to further the conversation, never to be used as, this site says that this is fair, therefore you should agree to this trade. We never wanted it to be like that. It's going to be different for everybody, and you can't tell somebody to like somebody.
Right. Exactly. You cannot do that.
you can't force someone into liking any. I mean, you can persuade as much as you want, but at the end of the day, the other side has to need those players or be emotionally invested in them, So that's the where that came about. And, we were the first to market, which really helps. We were free at the time when we first came out, and for a couple of years we ran it free until we're like, well, it's time to do a facelift and infuse a little more tools to differentiate the different tools out there, because a lot of people were still using ADP, and we're like, okay, but ADP is not dynamic. ADP is not going to adjust for the league size, for PPR, half PPR, tight end premium, two quarterback super flat. They're not going to do that.
Right.
So we made it so that it could do that. And we prided ourselves on keeping up to date on the value. Like, if something happened in the news, we were on top of it within 5 minutes to make sure that value was adjusted to reflect that news.
Yeah, and that's what I love about it, is how quickly it's updated, and the fact that you do have all those things at your disposal now, all the settings, and you can go in there and select your league and it brings it. It's great. It's perfection, So, but every now and then you get one of those tweets, you get the people that don't understand what a trade calculator is, who are like, "Oh, you can't just rely on what the, what one site's telling you." Duh. But also, duh. I mean, that should be common knowledge that, you can't just rely on one thing. You got to kind of use yourself too as a,
yes,
as a base point. But what do you say to people? I'm sure you've seen it. I saw you nodding your head. Yeah. What do you have to say to those people maybe that are listening right now that don't really get what a trade calculator? I mean, you explained it, but maybe they don't really get, they think it's just something that people use to
cheat
the system. I don't know.
It could be. Some of it is that, where some folks are sort of misrepresenting it. They're saying that this is something that you should abide by. We should all abide by, down to the letter. When really, it's just this is the closest that we think we can get. And you guys have to put your own lens of your situation and your league makeup. We can't predict what your league mates are like, right? It is open market value in a vacuum, and that's how we present ourselves out there. So to anyone who might think, they're not good for your league. Well, that may be so. It can be used as a crutch, but it also can be, a quick companion as well. That's all it should be. Because if let's say you consider yourself an expert, maybe the calculator is not for you. It's, if you're up to date on the news and you understand every NFL team's makeup and all the offensive position. And we have IDP as well. But if you know all the positions and how they relate to each other and target share and, production and efficiency and, then maybe it's not going to help you as much, but it could still be a checkpoint for you, or for your other league mate, right? Maybe not for you, but you've got maybe, 11 other league mates potentially that may not be like that for you. And so having a third party, just not a mediator, but again, a springboard, something that can just set the tone. Then, oftentimes we find that it does grease the wheels. It gets things going faster because it's not your word versus theirs at that point. Now it's kind of a three-way conversation.
And what I really like about it too is to be able to look at the players and see what they're valued at and be like, okay, well, maybe he doesn't want this player, but this player is very similar in, value or whatever. And so maybe if I try to throw that in instead of this player, it is a fun tool to use. Yeah. Nobody's saying that it's like the only thing. No, not at all. But, I do get a little upset though when I plug in something into the calculator and it's like really even. And then I'm like, cool, I feel good about this. I'm not like over here looking like a tool who's just putting out something into the space. And then it immediately gets rejected. No, I don't want that. I'm like, really? it does frustrate me.
Oh my God, me too. But here's the deal with that. So when you're saying even, that's like when one side's value is pretty near the other's, like numerically, right? But when you're talking, let's say there's no trade calculator at all. If that's your goal is to get to an even value, that's all well and good, but we all know that sometimes people need to be incentivized to move somebody. So having somebody of equal value might just be a push. It might be completely neutral. It won't change their team, and in their mind, they're going, well, what's the point there? But you never know. There are those unicorn deals where it does make sense, like a running back for a wide receiver in the same vicinity.
Yeah,
great. We can help each other. I'm deficient there. You're deficient in another place. We can help each other. It's symbiotic. But we're all competing too. I want to get the max value out of every trade I'm doing. Max value doesn't necessarily mean an overpay. I mean, or a godfather offer, as some people put it, where something you can't refuse. You're going to occasionally put those out because you got to have a guy. But more often, if you're playing Dynasty and you're playing the value game, you're not doing that. You're trying to get as much value on your side as possible without burning that bridge. and that's important, right? Because you got to come back to that well eventually. And if that person gets burned thinking at the time it was good because a calculator showed them or a buddy told them it was a good deal, whatever. If they get burned, they're not going to have the same feeling coming back to the table with you. Right. So it is a ballet. You have to dance around it. You gotta, sometimes you gotta play the game. But that's why we have so many tools at our disposal now, is just to give us different angles of things and using it as a collection to make decisions.
Did you ever think that there would be so many settings and little wrinkles to leagues when you were first starting out in this thing? Or was it take you by surprise completely?
It did take me by surprise until I was really ingrained in the Twitter community, because I think a lot of the folks out there that, the circles we run in there, they're looking to innovate on fantasy. How can we make this a little bit different from the last year we played to make it more interesting? Cause a lot of these people have dozens of leagues, some even hundreds, and they don't want to have a cookie cutter league, and have them be all the same. So for those people, I get it. For your average Joe who plays one, maybe two leagues, it could be too much. So people are, they're different. Their interests are different. If you're a diehard hard sports fan, you're going to try to look for different ways to spice things up. So I didn't think it would be that intricate in all the different settings that exists now. Like I thought when Superflex came out, that was like is a big revolution.
And, yeah, right.
You know, and it's not, I mean, the concept's easy enough, right? You just add another player and, you know, the active rosters are bigger, more ways to score points. Great. But no, there's so many, and the ways you can score points, like, you know,
yeah.
The points per first down, right? It was never even thought of, you know, really back then. You know, even fractional points weren't even considered back then, back when I started. So no, I love to see that. I do like to see variation. But for me, I am a traditionalist.
Yeah.
Because I like to think, you know, on Sunday, I have my leagues that I manage, but I don't want to think too hard. Oh, did that play advance me? You know, did it put me ahead here? You know, how many points was that touchdown? Okay, it's six in this league, but four in that league. Like, I don't like that. I like to be able to go, okay, that play will, you know, it consistently gave me this production across all my leagues, preferably. But that's me. I like to simplify on Sunday so I can enjoy the game. I'm more, you know, a spectator of the sport itself. And then this is a companion game to that on Sundays. Everything in between, then it's fantasy full time. You know, that's all that exists. There are no games to watch, right? So you kind of have to, but I do like going between them like that.
How many leagues are you in right now?
Four dynasty and one redraft.
I was going to ask if you are in any redraft leagues. So how does your mindset have to change going from dynasty back to redraft?
It's hard. I'm not going to lie. I have a harder time with redraft now because I just don't care about waivers. And I don't know if you agree, but I think redraft, your season's won or lost on the waiver wire.
It is definitely.
You agree?
Wow. Okay. And that's kind of my reason for playing redraft for as long as I did.
Oh, yeah?
Because I really like playing the waiver wire. Like, that's, yeah. I don't know. So, you know,
it's
to each their own.
It's to each their own for sure. But if you don't have the time to, you know, dedicate that Tuesday another night or, because it is, you have to build that into your schedule.
You really
think about it.
And I got,
if you forget, your season's over because you know, someone's going to blow up week one, two, or three, you know, or conversely at the back end near the playoffs, someone's going to come out of nowhere because someone was getting rested or there's an injury. And that's all it took. Mm-hmm. And all that work you did in the preseason to prepare for the draft. And, you know, the draft went, you know, maybe there are some surprises, but for the most part, drafts are kind of chalk. Yeah. Cause everyone's got the same resources online for the most part. Right. Mm-hmm. Unless you're in a, you know, an analyst league or something. And then I'm sure you're really trying to outsmart the next guy. Right. But more often than not, you know, it's the variations in the waivers and the luck of the draw. Are you at the top of that waiver pool? The sequence that, or, you know, if you're doing fab, are you bidding the highest?
Right.
Yeah. So it is harder. And then the drafts are for redraft. I think good practice. They get you in the mindset of, you know, the risers and fallers from year to year. They actually help you with like acquisition targets in trades, right? Because so if you start to see the guys are going higher in a redraft league, you know, they're gaining value at this moment. The leagues, their season's approaching, so people are more apt to get caught up in like the hype and stuff. And you can take advantage of that between redraft and dynasty, especially with the top side of the rankings, like the big names for sure. And then you have to ignore all the bench guys, all the, you know, the fourth, fifth wide receiver types, you know, that probably will never see the light of day. You just forget them that they ever existed and ignore them on redraft draft day. Right. So that can be difficult because I love trying to find the next, you know, a guy, the guy comes out of nowhere. Like Travis Fulgham was supposed to do last year, but he fell off the map, but like that guy, right? No one knew Travis Fulgham wasn't in until he blew up the first half of the year. But I'm sure he won a lot of weeks for some people who are paying attention to the waivers, you know?
And to have Dynasty be such a big thing now, something that's gained momentum over the last few years, but to know that there are people out there that have never even heard of Dynasty football, Dynasty fantasy football before, like what goes through your mind when you think, oh man, there are people out there that have no clue what I'm, you know, a part of.
No, it is interesting because it's not that big of a leap in concept, right?
Right.
Instead of throwing guys back, you're keeping them. That's effectively the change. Right. Mm-hmm. You can have the same scoring system in redraft and dynasty. It's no different. If you're and there, I mean, I don't know the exact numbers of the split redraft and dynasty, but I believe it's around 35% of redraft players play dynasty as well. And growing grows every year. But that is pretty low. Right.
I mean, right.
But it's exciting for me because I have such passion for dynasty. I love to bring people into that world that love football because it's to me, it's the most authentic GM experience you can get in fantasy sports. To be able to go through those same, decision points that real GMs do, right? With the rookies, with who to elevate from your practice squad to your active roster and waivers too. And if, God bless you if you're in a contract league. I don't have any of those, but I have a lot of respect for people who do because that is some hardcore stuff. Right? Sometimes it could crosses the line of being work or like homework almost, and it's overwhelming, then don't do it. But for some people that's the most authentic, right? And I wish I had the time to dedicate to something like that, because that's really hardcore stuff. But Dynasty's not, I mean, it gives you something to do between February and September. You know, if you want the party to keep going, there's really only one party. It's Dynasty, we've got a whole community that stays buzzing all year. And I think the sport helps too, because they thoughtfully spread things out so that there's usually something happening. We have a dead zone in the summer where people go on vacation and it's usually right before camp and all that. But other than that, there's rookie news, there's camp news. There's usually drama to do with, someone's legal issues. There's always, there's camp battles to look forward to. So there's always drama, that affects value, right? There's hardly any news that comes out that has no ramifications, So that's, I like that. And football is the only sport in my life. I don't pay attention to baseball anymore. Basketball is in my peripheral. Like I'm kind of watching it, but I don't tune in anymore like I used to. And I was watching almost every game, the Lakers in the 90s, the Kobe Shaq years, I don't know why it just kind of fell off for me. And I don't know if I have room in my brain for more knowledge as it pertains to sports, more player pools and names and stats and stuff like that. Like it's too much for me personally. So I just focus on football.
And that's how I am too. I was huge Rangers fan, huge Mavericks fan. And then it was like fantasy football kind of just took the place of those guys. So, speaking of getting people involved in Dynasty and how you enjoy doing that, you're one of the reasons why I got involved in Dynasty in the first place. Like you're like the 101 of, getting me involved in Dynasty. So when you decided to come up with Dynasty Origins and put that out there, why did you do it and how did you get people interested in that anyway?
I did it because I saw you had mild interest in it. You were the catalyst for Dynasty Origins. I was just scrolling through Twitter as I usually do, and I saw the topic came up. Someone was asking you, do you play Dynasty? Or, why don't you play Dynasty? Something like that. And you were like, I've thought about it. I've kind of wanted to, but I don't know. I don't know if I'd, I think there was something about getting into it with like industry folks that was a little intimidating for you, if I recall correctly.
Yes, that was definitely it. Cause that's how I knew of Dynasty in the first place, was through all my friends in the industry. So I'm like, that's the only way I'm going to be able to get in.
Right. And I'm sure that would have been tough sledding for somebody right out of the gate to you know, go up against those experts.
Just wait to go into a John Bosch league the next year and decide that's like ripping the Band-Aid off real fast.
Oh, yes, it is. Johnny, that is a shot in the arm. If you ever go to John Bosch's leagues like as a rookie, you are in for a shock. Because talk about someone who likes to tweak league settings and innovate. That guy is all about it. I love him for it. For the folks like you, perhaps that know about it or heard about it, mm-hmm. have wanted to, but just didn't take that next step. It seemed logical to just get a group together, folks that have never done it before and have them compete with each other and take that intimidation factor out. I remember running some polls actually around that time because it got me thinking, like, why don't more people play Dynasty? And it that was the number one return on why. It was intimidation. They were unsure how they would do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a commitment. You're a Dynasty League. You're not signing up for 1 year, hopefully.
Right.
Please don't do that. If you're out there thinking about it, do not sign up for a 1 year done. You should be in it for the long haul mentally. If it falls through, it falls through. But, you know, it's a commitment. So you want to start off on the right foot. You want to know what you're doing as much as possible, but you want to get the sense that you're not going to get trampled your first year out, and you have to suffer for possibly years with a really bad team and have to go along with it, right? Because redraft, there is no such thing. You can start afresh. There's no risk whatsoever to having a bad year. So, I saw that right away. I'm like, you know what? I want to get her in if at all possible and sniff it just to see if it was your cup of tea. And thankfully, yeah, you agreed and we got 11 others on board and Dynasty Origins was born. And we're going into our fourth year now.
That is super awesome. That is like the fact that there's so many people that just wanted to get involved and just couldn't. And now they have that opportunity. That's just really awesome. And I won a league last year and
hey,
there you go. Right. It was the very first year of the league and I won it. And, you know, shout out to Dynasty Outhouse Russ for letting me win that league. You know, no big deal. I let me win. I won. But yeah,
that's some stiff competition. It's, he's no slouch.
Right. And you guys all are like so immersed in this Dynasty world, which is so awesome to hear you guys talk about it, to hear like the Dynasty Trade Calculator podcast and to hear you guest on other people's pods and all of that. There are people out there that want to podcast and want to be, you know, behind the microphone, but they're, again, just like Dynasty, they're scared to like take the leap. What kind of advice do you have for people who are just starting out that are kind of like nervous or just don't know how to get started?
Specifically with podcasting or just like the industry?
Well, let's just say, okay, well, let's take a look at it as an industry as a whole first. We'll look at mm-hmm. it from that level. So like the big picture, the fantasy football industry, what kind of advice do you have for people who are brand new to it, but want to get involved and want to be a part of it?
Oh, so I see a lot of folks coming out now that, you know, weren't around, you know, years ago, you know, that just seemingly came out of nowhere. And what they've been doing is doing their own thing on their own, I guess, blog or website, or maybe it's a podcast, their own thing, not affiliated with anybody, mm-hmm. doing their own thing and gaining a following that way. And I mean, we've got social media is such that there are no barriers. There's right. no gatekeeper saying you can and can't publish that. You can publish anything you want. And it is a snowball effect. The more good work you do, the more eyeballs will notice. And it's organic. Somebody else, and it's a pyramid too. Somebody higher up than the last person is gonna notice you. And you know, that's another thing. Like you can't, if you've started this thing, you know, you can't stop. You got to keep going. When you hear people talking about a grind, it's for real. It's a grind, and there's a ton of people out there who want to do it too. You just have to want it more. it sounds cheesy and cliche, but it's so true. You have got to, you know, eat, sleep, and breathe this stuff. But if you do, I promise you, people will notice. You don't even have to, you know, you don't have to have a face for video. You don't have to be, you know, glamorous or cool or funny. Like, you just have to care about your craft and get better at it and get better. And try to find somebody out there too that you like, that could be a mentor for you. Someone you could bounce ideas off of, get some advice. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people out there who are willing to do that just because they're nice people. There's
right.
a ton of people. You'd be surprised how much help you could get just by asking. And stay humble. I think that's a big one too. You know, don't think you're hot shit right out of the gate. You know, try to do your best to let your work speak for yourself more than, you know, your personality. Perhaps I value work over personality. When you combine those two things and you've got magic, that's the best case scenario. But you don't necessarily have to have all that in one package right out of the gate. Just focus on your work, and that work, I mean, I'm sure you've heard it, like, you can't do what everyone else is doing. There's 100 websites out there doing rankings and articles on players and buys and sells and stuff like that. Like, find a niche, you know, find a different way to analyze that data. Find, more robust tools to analyze film, like, you know, with markup and, be able to reverse and fast forward footage and, you know, do more than just pull up a YouTube page. I think people appreciate production value too. In this day of YouTube, like this age of YouTube, I think we've gotten used to people just getting on with whatever they had and make do with whatever they had. And that works for a while. But after a while, if you want to be taken seriously and be a professional, you do have to raise your game when it comes to production value. And that's making sure, if it's a podcast, you sound good. First mm-hmm. and foremost, people are going to turn you off. I promise you, they're going to turn you off the first 30, 40 seconds after they hear your intro. If you've got crappy audio, no one will sit through an hour plus of that.
Right.
They don't have to, because they have so many options. Mm-hmm. So production value is huge. And if it's video, spend some time on your setup, your video setup. You know, camera's obviously going to be important, but lights. You know, don't ignore lighting. Don't ignore your audio if you're doing video. And it isn't, don't have, you know, if it's a podcast, yeah, that's all you really have to focus on. But if you're doing video, it has to sound good too. Same principle applies. Mm-hmm. So learn that and, you know, go on YouTube and find tutorials on how to, you know, best configure your setup to make it work for you. But then, you know, take it seriously and, you know, edit yourself. I can't tell you how many times I've seen unedited video or podcasts and just go, you know, that could have been cleaned up. The delivery would have sounded a lot more professional and I would have received it differently, mm-hmm. you know? But that's just my opinion that, you know, I'm sure a lot of people have made it doing the opposite. So,
I mean, yeah, I've heard all kinds of stuff, but, you know, personally, when I'm listening to a podcast, yeah, I want to make sure that the audio sounds clear. Like you were saying, it doesn't sound like, I mean, when podcasts first started out, sure, they did. I remember when podcasts all sounded, you know, really muffled and you like really had the volume up real loud. But
yeah.
And I'm not saying I'm good at all this stuff or anything. I mean, doing it definitely is a learning process, and you're definitely going to learn how to sound better as you go. Like, now that I'm past 30 episodes, like, I can, yeah. I know where to sit and mm-hmm. how to, you know, how to have the microphone positioned so that the sound's clear. And yeah, you learn these things.
And it's a lot of times you can't know ahead of time. You're just going to have to do it, learn the hard way. That's fine. And I think people will give you some of those allowances, mm-hmm. but care about it. You know, don't just think, oh, it'll be fine.
Right. You know? Right. So being somebody, let's say somebody decides, let's say I was writing, but I really would rather do a podcast, or I, you know, would rather be in front of the camera, one of those. What kind of advice, what is like maybe some little tiny tips that you don't really think about when you're going into that kind of, thing versus writing? Like, what's something that like you don't think about?
Yeah, they are very different worlds because, you know, with writing, it's just you and your computer, and you can, you know, take as long as you need. You can edit yourself and then only release, you know, what you like. Similar in podcasting, but there's more of a showmanship to it. You're entertaining as well as informing. So with podcast, you've got to prepare, right? Depending on your format, right? This format, mm-hmm. we're more casual, you know, shooting the shit kind of thing. But you know, if you've got segments that you need to hit and get through, and there's topics that you don't want to miss, you got to have a show flow, you know, your notes, and you got to confer with your co-hosts if you have them ahead of time. Don't just hop on and start talking. I think when people ramble, it's noticeable that you're not prepared. You're just, you know, talking off the cuff, you know, free association style, which some people might like, but I consider podcasts to be shows. There's a structure to them. There's a beginning, middle, and end. Mm-hmm. There are segues are important, you know, infusing the entertainment into it is important, but knowing what's that ratio, that's going to be different for everybody. You know, some people have to rely on their showmanship because they're deficient in the other side, the analysis side of it. Mm-hmm. I think the best people are that, you know, they do both equally well. And, you know, and there's the regular cadence too. Everybody, if you're not doing this full time, I'm not doing this full time. If you're mm-hmm. not, it's even more important that you carve out and dedicate the time to do whatever it is, writing or podcasting regularly. Don't do, you know, a few of them and then lay dormant for a month or two. And then, you know, I feel like getting another one back out there. You're going to get lost in the noise. People are going to forget who you are, have to relearn who you are. Mm-hmm. Just keep in their ear. Keep, you know, like, hey, I'm here. I'm part of the conversation. I've got something interesting to contribute. And, you know, and that's going to help you practice too. More than anything else, just learn what works and what doesn't work. But play with it, have fun. Like, you know, don't always talk about the one thing, you know, that, your show description says you're all about. You can mix it up too and still have it be poignant. They don't have to be tangents, if you're not talking about football, but, recognize that there is, it's important to balance and, you know, rein that in if you do go too far. Honestly, it's going to come down to, what you got to bring to the table. How is your voice different? You know? But I think everyone given the opportunity has got something an edge, mm-hmm. right? That makes them different and special. And you know, you got to find that, and that you're not going to, and great if you know that upfront, but sometimes you got to find yourself.
And you were talking about having a full-time job and not doing this as your full-time job, which a lot of people don't realize when they see you behind us, you know, something that is as prominent or whatever as what you stand behind. It's, you know, people don't get the grind's even harder. Some, you know, a lot of the time, because you have to come home after your job and immediate, you know, get into this, you know, fantasy football mode. So how do you balance everything so that you don't burn out?
You have to have good support system in your life. I think that's mm-hmm. first and foremost. If you're a single person, you don't have to worry about it as much. It's more self-care. But if you've got people in your life, spouse, kids, you know, other family members, friends, you know, they've got to be able to support you along the way and not feel like this passion of yours is a detriment to their lifestyle. Right. So,
right.
You know, and I know that's not for every, you know, some people's situations aren't as accommodating, you know, and they have to, organize their schedules, you know, so that they're not monopolizing their time with this thing. But, you know, if you do have that support, then it becomes, it's about discipline. can you be a self-driver? Can you be proactive? Can you keep yourself accountable without anyone else over your shoulder? Because, you know, no one's going to do it. No one's going to make you be great. Mm-hmm. And you have to want, I don't know, are you a competitive person? Besides fantasy football, do you like to win?
Yes.
In everything you do?
Yep.
Then, you know, that might be what drives you. I want to be better than, you know, John Smith, the writer, you know, on ESPN. Like, I hear this person's voice. I think I could say it even better than them, you know. And that could drive, you know, a competitive spirit will definitely keep gassing your tank. Mm-hmm. I'm like that. I don't like to be second place, like ever.
Ever.
It's really, yeah. I mean, but, you know, being, everyone's measure of success is different.
Right.
Right. So you don't also think like, if I'm not doing this full time, then I'm not a success. That's absolutely not the case. You can carve out quite a following part time. Trust mm-hmm. me, you know, and you can be famous part time. I've seen it. You've seen it. Mm-hmm. So don't think that it won't happen for you unless you're full time. As long as you, like I said, you're disciplined and want it more than the next person.
Right. And you talked about the word grind earlier and how that's a real thing, grinding and grinding. How many nights do you stay up, you know, past your quote unquote bedtime, you know, putting in the work and grinding and doing all that?
So for me personally, it's relegated to the middle of the week. I put aside time to record the pod, then edit. But then I also run the website graphics for us. So I'm doing something for the website every night. So I dedicate 3 hours a night to DTC Monday through Thursday. Friday night is movie night. I can't encroach on that because, like I talked about earlier, my support system expects that time, you know, with her on Friday night, and I make sure that we set that aside. But she knows the rest of the nights. You know, this is where I'm going to be, and I'm working towards driving the brand further, which is, you know, my passion. I want to see DTC, you know, among the best of the best out there in the industry, and you know, we've thankfully been able to get that far because, you know, we've come into contact with a lot of great people like yourself in the industry are just really awesome, and supportive and, you know, realize that we're doing something different. And there's room for everybody too, by the way, you know, there really is. And it feels like one big family sometimes, you know,
it really does.
Families fight, right? Sometimes,
yeah.
But at the same time, I think there is more positivity than not. In the community, which I love to see. And I love being a part of it.
As you were talking about like movie night and the support system and your family and everything, what do you guys like to do besides just movie night? What's some other things that you guys like to do in your free time?
Yeah. Big TV and movie people. I mean, I'm a media guy, so I'm addicted to screens in general. I'll just be honest. If I'm not, you know, creating media, I'm consuming it. So I'm on Netflix, you know, and HBO and all the rest of it most of the time. Like I'll have something on while I'm working. Usually I like to double task it. And my, you know, I just need that, you know, the ability to go between things, and simultaneously have them going, just get more done. Right. Cause I feel like I'll miss out if I don't do more than one thing at one time. But other stuff, I mean, we've got the kids, so they kind of dictate my life. They're younger, 5 and 8. So they need a lot of handholding at this age. And so I really try to, relegate my like football stuff to when they're in bed so that they don't feel like this is taking away from them. And so I'm able to, you know, be a part of what they're doing, help with homework, get them fed, you know, the whole nine with the kids. But now but thankfully a little older and that we can go do stuff like, where do we go? We went to the Ren Fair Like last weekend, for instance, like the first time we went to the Ren Faire with my kids, I'm like, this is awesome. You know, all these people dressed up and these crazy outfits and, you know, pretending like they're, you know, in these shows that my daughter watches, you know, like Sophia the First, it's like, you know, medieval themed, but she, you know, she's like living in Sophia the First and, you know, to get to do that with them. It's just really awesome. So I'm loving life in that regard right now. But you know, when kids are out of the equation, I'm trying to look for live shows, live music. I got a lot of great venues around me. I'm in the suburb of Chicago. I don't even have to go downtown to do that. Thankfully, I've got some theaters around here with some pretty good acts. So now that things are opening up, like that's all I want to do is, you know, because musicians have been doing, you know, either Zoom shows or nothing at all, you know, or, you know, maybe songwriting, but they've been aching to get out back into the scene. And, you know, I've been trying to, you know, do the same, just get back out there and see as much live stuff as I could. Planning trips, you know, now that we can travel again, like I want to go to Italy, some planning trip to Italy, stuff.
Go
like
to
that.
Italy.
Yeah. You know,
have you ever been to Italy?
A couple times, but my wife hasn't.
Okay.
And so I want to do that quintessential romantic Italian getaway.
We went there for our honeymoon. Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah. So fun.
Oh, the best. So I'm jealous. I haven't been able to do it with a significant other yet. So that's a whole different ball game. So yeah, but that I'm into outdoors sport, like sportsman club stuff, shotgun sports, fishing, archery. I've got a club nearby me that I go to for that. And the football, you know. Yeah, I used to be into pool pretty heavily. I played competitive pool in a league for a few years there, but I had to drop it when the kids came around because can't be hanging out in the bar at all hours when you got, you know, 1 month old at home.
Yeah.
People tend to frown on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah.
Did, with the pandemic and everything, how did that change your family life and what you guys did on a daily basis?
Oh my God. So I work from home. My wife works from home. So my kids had to be, you know, taken out of school and they were at home like millions of parents. It was a living hell. I don't mind saying when you're trying to earn a living and parent, it's just crazy. If they're young kids and they can't do anything for themselves, like, you know, they can't even really, I mean, they maybe make themselves a bowl of cereal. That's all I would really trust them with.
That's,
you know, but you know, and my daughter had to learn how to use a Chromebook at the age of 7 years old.
Wow.
They don't issue those standard issue at that age, but they did because of COVID. They had to bring a Chromebook home so they could do their virtual learning. And she had to learn, you know, how to use a browser and like how to simple stuff like username and password. And, you know, like,
oh, man.
We were just like, you know, second nature for us, but I had to teach that to a young kid and quickly and still earn a living. So no, it was not a pleasant thing whatsoever.
Yeah.
I'm very happy they're going back to school. And they're happy that's, you know, that once they were able to go back last year, they were over the moon. You know, their friends are all there. You know, we're not yelling at them constantly to keep quiet because we're on conference calls and, you know, it was a better situation when they were able to go back. But yeah. How about you? What was it any different?
Like I got to work from home for a good portion. I just basically did the exact same stuff here at the house that, you know, I did do at work. They made us take our entire computer home with us, like the desktop, like bringing that whole guy here. Cause they didn't have enough laptops in the county for everybody to have one.
Oh,
so they're like, you have to take your actual work computer home with you. So, did that, just got to hang out in the office and, you know, shortened lunches, but it was cool when my wife was working from home. So, I mean, she still is. So we each have our own office. I'm upstairs, she's downstairs. So didn't really, working from home was like the coolest thing. And that, like, I can't believe how excited I was to be able to get to work from home.
Oh my God. Isn't it the best?
Oh yeah.
I was working in the office for the first 15 years of my career, and then I switched different parts of the company, and then they didn't care where I was because my boss is in Denver. So after doing that and then going, you know, every day down to one room, you know, it was a welcome change for sure. You know, I just spoke about double tasking.
Yeah.
I mean, you can quadruple task when you work at home, you know,
yeah,
you got laundry going, you know, you might have something in the crock pot for dinner cooking on a conference call, you know, and, you know, planning to do, you know, mow the lawn the next, you know, 5 minutes after your conference call, you know, couldn't even fathom that, you know, so I don't want to go back. I don't want to give this up.
Yeah. When they called us and told us we had to come back into the office, I was like, I'm happy I have a job.
Are you sure?
I can do it from home, I promise.
Yeah. It's cheaper for you guys.
Yeah, I think I was probably more productive from home, honestly. So you know.
Yeah. Well, most people did. They were productive during their commute time. What would have been their commute? So it is. It's a good deal for both sides, but I don't know. Maybe not so much for the economy, I hear. I think people need to get back to the office to get things humming at high velocity, you know?
Yeah. No, I get it. I get it. And then like, yeah, it's a, and we work, like I work in a building that has tons of people in and out, in and out, in and out, in and out. And, you know, being in Texas, like nobody cared anyway in the first place. So like, so that's just all I have to say on that is just like, you know, cool. I would love to just, you know, work from home. So maybe someday they'll be like, you know what? It actually worked out really well that you guys are working from home.
I hope there's some, recalibration of what that looks like for people. You know, maybe we split the time, you know.
I wanted to bring this up and I almost forgot, but you had brought up Twitter and, you know, find the community that's on Twitter for starters. Like, did you ever in a million years think that there was going to be some sort of community for fantasy football where people were like this connected?
Not this connected. I figured, you know, there are people out there that trying to make their way in the world and would be a little more responsive, but I didn't think that like the Matthew Berrys of the world would be giving, you know, some of these folks the time of day, but there seems to be that the mingling of the tiers, right? Those exist, but the support, I think, and the cross collaboration between entities, you know, individuals with groups, individuals with individuals, and, you know, just forging new partnerships where I don't think it would have been possible without something like Twitter. You know, you just have to be brave. You have to be okay with putting yourself out there and taking that risk that, you know, maybe someone won't like me, but maybe two others will. And that's who I'm talking to. I'm talking to those two people, not that other one person. And I think once you get that and you find your audience, then it comes back to the snowball effect I was talking about. Just keep doing it and it'll get bigger and bigger by itself, just by you doing it.
And the fantasy football community, like there's like an expo now that's going on. Are you going to the expo?
I'm going.
Okay. Me too. So there we go. So yeah, it's going to be crazy to see that many people together that are all there for the same
thing.
Crazy thing. Yeah.
We have this collective craziness, you know, that we've got football in the brain all the time. I think if you're going there, it's safe to say that, you know, this is more than just a pastime for you. This is a passion and it's part of your life. But I'm so excited to meet people in person that I've been interacting with online for years. And I feel like I know them, but I've never met. I think that's going to happen. I think a lot of people are just going to like fall into that online discourse, you know, like that kind of tone, like it's going to take over in real life. I have a feeling, and it's going to be, you know, just like we were all hanging out, you know, with our computers, but without that, we got the nice ability to see our faces and expressions and, you know, body language and, you know, be able to, you know, high five or hug, you know, something like that. Those little things I think are important for, you know, keeping relationships going. And that's really what it's all about is relationships. And, you know, you've got to give to get, You know,
yeah,
you got to support other people and recognize good work if you want others to do the same for you.
For sure. And we are, I think we are going to all come together. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be so fun. It's going to be it. I think this is the perfect time to, you know, because everybody's been stuck at home, you know, and now we get to all like go meet up. It's going to just be like debauchery. Like
it's going to be, it's gonna be an explosion of just this pent up energy. I really agree with you there. Like, I know I am. I'm aching to get out and just, yeah, embrace the different walks of life that are going to be walking through there. And you know, the different personalities that we've come to know through this medium and see that living, breathing in front of you. Like, that's maybe with a mask on, but living and breathing, you know.
yes.
6 feet away, living and breathing.
Yeah.
But, you know, and it's still with that amount of camaraderie, I think, that we feel all the time.
For sure. For sure. It's going to be a blast. So I want to talk about something else that's really fun that you brought up earlier, but I want to know more about what is your favorite band that you've seen live? Like, what's the ultimate concert that you've been to that it's just been so dope?
It might be a tie between Tool.
Mm-hmm.
And Roger Waters did the Wall tour a few years ago, and that's I don't know if you've seen the Wall's production, but like it's almost like a play, a rock opera. With his sets and, you know, effects and lights and I mean, I think he, you know, gets a whole like choir together and like, it's just a whole thing. So I love that kind of showmanship. And even bands like, that, I don't know, I've kind of grown out of like Slipknot, you know, I love, you know, but they throw a great freaking show, like, you know, unforgettable shows. Korn was a big one for me. Static X. So if you can't tell, I was really into metal back in the day.
But, yes, I can see that.
not so much anymore. I'm, if anything, regressed back to like 60s and 70s music. I'm really into Led Zeppelin right now.
Wow.
Yeah, really into it. Studying Jimmy Page and thinking about acquiring a double neck guitar and everything. Try to work my way through Stairway to Heaven. Yeah. But I do appreciate the classics a lot more these days versus some of that, you know, pop stuff that I grew up with in high school years and beyond.
And the Olympics are a big thing right now. Yay. Mm. And I saw like a meme thing going around the other day that was like, what's an Olympic sport that you think you'd have the biggest shot of winning a medal in? So is there any Olympic sport that, I'm not saying that you would actually win a medal, but what is the one that you probably have the best shot at winning?
Does it have to be physical?
It could be whatever you want. I'd like to see what you can pull out of here, but
all right, I'm gonna go digital because I think they're, you know, one day esports will be an Olympic thing, maybe. But I think I could probably medal in Worms Armageddon, the video game. You ever heard of Worms?
No.
Oh
Worms. No.
It's just, okay, just real briefly. It's an old game, an old franchise, back to the 90s. Team 17 is a developer. They're English. But it's a 2D almost like tower defense game where you've got teams of worms that are firing like nukes and rocket launchers, shotgun, like they're battling, like having a war, but they're little cartoon worms and destructive environments and all that. And, you know, if you fall in the water, you die. So it's almost like chess, but with guns.
That kind of sounds familiar. It's kind of like something, one of those things that like sounds really familiar. Like, I don't know where I would have, I don't know, but
maybe in the peripheral. I mean, they've been around so many and they've had different iterations. There's like Worms 3D, you know, like they've had different takes on it over the years. But it's a heavily physics based game.
Okay.
So you, you know, trajectories are a big thing and, you know, kind of in your mind calculating, you know, distance and velocity and, you know, getting things to land in the right way or the angles to line up. That's what this game's all about. And yeah, I'm not ashamed to say I've been the best in the world on the Xbox leaderboards one time. I want to say, I don't know, 2010, something like that. 2011. Okay. a decade ago, something like that. But
hey, you know, give this man a medal. This man deserves a medal, an Olympic medal.
Here, baby, play that national anthem. Let me hear
there
it.
There you go. There you go. See, and I would have never thought, you know, I was like, oh, probably like that 3-on-3 basketball they have now because you can't rely on me, but there's two other people I can rely on. So as long as I don't have to do any of the work.
just ride the coattails. That would be ideal.
That's ideal. So
be the hype man, you know, or something for that trio.
I think you need one of those because there's always that one. You know, you need to have that one that there's always that. I could be in the Olympics. Like, no, you couldn't.
Like the alley-oop guy. I'd be the guy that like just tossed it up and let the other guy like finish it and actually score something. Yeah.
And look at you being a team player. That's what you're doing. You're being a team player. So there you go. Get your medals.
I don't like the spotlight. I'm a producer. I'm in the background. You know, I let the other people shine.
And you know what? You shine as a producer. So yeah. You're welcome. You're welcome. Well, I really enjoyed talking with you. Like, I'm so happy that I got to sit down and talk with you because Dynasty is so important to me now, and you're a big reason why. So, you know,
we're so happy to have you.
So, and I'm still learning, but you know, being able to learn from people like you is just super dope, and be able to talk to people like you, like you were saying earlier, reaching out and stuff. I know I can reach out to you and you'll be like, hey,
anytime.
Dynasty's not as crazy as you think it is. It's calm down a little bit. It's good.
You can do this. You can do it. You just, you know, as long as you don't mind getting pestered by trade offers in like the middle of May, if you can handle that and your mind is, you know, able to, you know, stay in football zone, then definitely give it a try. But yeah, it's super awesome to have you, you know, try it out and take a liking to it. And now, hey, we got something in common. So
that's awesome. Super awesome. So go ahead and let everybody that's listening right now, let them know where they can find you, where all your work is, and what you got going on in your life.
Yeah. Well, so mostly going to be the Dynasty Trade Calculator podcast. It's on, you know, iTunes and the Google Marketplace, anywhere you can get podcasts. So it's a show all about trading and, you know, player values. And so we got John Paul Hurley, Izzy Elkafuss, and Nick Whalen on that podcast. And we are weekly. You can also find the rest of my work on dynastytradecalculator.com.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I, again, like, thank you so much for coming on. Like, so amazing.
No, you're the best. Thank you for having me.
I get all like, yay, at the end, but it really is great to be able to talk with you about, you know, what goes on in your head. So it's pretty dope.
Oh, thank you.
Everybody, come back next week. We're going to have another episode, and make sure that you stay red.